Good morning. If you have your Bibles, go ahead and turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. And while you're turning there, I'll give some introductory comments here. For some of you, I only preach once a month, but for others of you, I preach like seven times a month. So I want to say, as I thought about this and think about this lesson, some of my sermons in the last month and a half have been awesome. I did a sermon on Calvinism last week. It was good. I did a sermon on I-85 a few weeks ago. It was pretty good, too. So, but it's a blessing to be able to be up here with y'all. As you know, some of the Spanish brethren, are now meeting with us in the auditorium here, and they have the headsets in the back. So I'm thankful for guys like Josh, and I'm saying that now so I remember that he's back there translating. I'm thankful for guys like Josh who can go to the back and translate a service like this so that all of us can worship the same God at the same time and everybody understand in their own tongue. And as we think about kind of this Spanish work, and some people have asked me, Bill, are we finally kicking you out? Is it finally the time for you to go? I have some bad news. I'm staying for a few more months. But we're excited about that. Heather and I are to continue to work with y'all and probably focus a little bit more on the Spanish work while we're here. But again, I ask y'all to continue to remember that this is a work that we're all doing. This isn't Bill's work or Josh's work or the work of the elders. This is the work of the church. And it's something that we covet your prayers for. And then you pray for your brethren, they are your brethren, and we pray for one another. And that's something that, again, I think it's been growing, I think it's been good, and it'll continue to be good if we continue to pray and if we continue to work together. So this morning, we're going to have kind of one of those wisdom lessons again. And a few months ago, maybe about a year ago now, I did a lesson going through the book of Proverbs, and I was telling you things about your life, and you were all like, why should you listen to me? You're young. Well, we're going to have another one of those, except we'll be in the book of Ecclesiastes this morning. And what I want us to do in this morning is I want us to consider our lives. And I want us to consider what moves you. Or even more importantly than what moves you, I want you to ask yourself, are you filled? I mean, like, when you think about your life, when you think about your day-to-day, when you think about who you are you filled? Do you feel satisfied? Do you feel whole? You know? Like, I think we think about people, like, that's what a lot of life is for everybody. It's us figuring out, am I whole? And the things that I do, why do I do them? Who am I? Where am I going? What's my purpose? This morning, what I want us to talk about and think about is thinking about this idea of the all of man. And we'll understand what that phrase means when we get to the end there. But I want us to try to figure out is how do we find fulfillment in a vain world? And before we really get into the lesson, I want to talk a little bit about the author of this book, because understanding the author of this book will help us understand the book a little bit better. And in fact, it'll kind of give some credibility to what's being said here. Because if I tried to tell you about the purpose of life and why you ought to live your life a certain way and why you shouldn't do some things and do some other things and why you should stop seeking some things and start seeking other things, you're going to tell me, well, you don't know much about anything. Like, well, how are you going to tell me don't seek money? You don't have any money. Like, how are you going to tell me don't try to be super smart? Like, you're not very smart. And again, so what I want to do is talk a little bit about who this author is to give some credibility to the things that are being said. So before we even kind of look at that, so again, as you think about the book of Ecclesiastes, it's one of the interesting books because, at least in the Old Testament, it's one of the books of wisdom, but the word is in Greek. And if you kind of hear Ecclesiastes, it almost kind of gives off, if you kind of hear ecclesia, or if you speak Spanish, iglesia, it's the word that we have for assembly. And what Ecclesiastes is, it's just, it's one big sermon. It starts off saying the preacher introduces himself, this is who's speaking, and you go all throughout the book, and what the preacher is doing is he's preaching this sermon, asking himself, where do we find fulfillment? And you get a conclusion at the end. And so again, if you want to kind of think about the book of Ecclesiastes, you can think of it in that way. It's just one big sermon. Now, for the sake of time, I won't go through the entire thing, but that's what it is. It's just one big sermon. And to understand this preacher here, the person who's speaking, you notice he starts off and he says, the preacher is the author of the book. Notice verse 1 and verse 2 here. He says, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. And so again, as we kind of understand this author, the person who's writing this book is a preacher. So this guy does what I do, except he probably did it a lot better. So this is a preacher up here speaking. You keep going, you also notice in that verse 1, and later on he'll say it in verse 12, it's the son of David, he's the king of Israel. You keep going in verse 16, he'll say how he had great knowledge and he knew a lot of things. And he had wisdom far above everyone else and anyone else. He had lots of riches. So some people, you know, the intelligence is what stimulates them. For other people, money is what stimulates them, and money is kind of what drives them. Well, he had a lot of riches, and if this is who I think it is, and just kind of to tell you who I think it is right here, I think Solomon seems like the author of this book. If this is the author, if Solomon is the author, and he is going to tell us, and we're going to, as we go through this book, he will tell us, we'll kind of consider this idea of what is your purpose and what do we seek. Let me tell you, there is no one who had more resources to look through life and find fulfillment and find satisfaction than this man did. And I'm going to spoil it for you. I'm going to tell you, because really he spoils it at the beginning, but he ends with the same idea. As Solomon gets to, as he starts off his sermon and he ends his sermon, he comes to the same conclusion. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. With all of the resources that he had, think about it. If he had unlimited resources, and he gets to the conclusion and he says, I find everything, I see everything, everything is vain. Everything is empty. Everything is a whisper. I think we need to heed these words because we have limited resources. And for me to say, I'm going to try to seek and find satisfaction in these things, I'll tell you, we're just going to run down rabbit holes that Solomon has already crossed for us. And he's telling us, listen to my words. He's telling us, pay attention to what I'm saying. And I want you to notice again, so in verse 3, as we kind of think about this search for the meaning of life, and I'm going to put it under the sun, because that's essentially what he does. As he looks for the meaning of life, he will look for the meaning of life in this world and the things under the sun. I want you to notice his premise or his theme statement. So if this is his theme statement, it'll be my theme statement because I'm just re-preaching his sermon. Notice his theme statement here in verses 2 and verse 3. Again, these are the words of the preacher. It says, vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage, or your translation might say, what profit does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? And so you notice again in verse 2, he starts off with this idea of vanities, all is vanity. And as he gets us to kind of think about this idea, I think the question that he's really asking us, if everything we live under is vain, if everything that we live under is empty, just kind of for the sake of illustration, if you take your hand and you blow into it, when you try to grab it, you see that there is nothing there. If everything is like that, then is anything real? Is anything substantial? Does anything have a purpose? These will be the things that throughout the book he will seek to find if they have purpose. Because if everything is vanity, then what's the purpose of anything? I think another question that he seeks to ask, and that's the verse 3. Another question he seeks to ask in verse 3, which will be the two things, the two big questions we'll seek to answer, is your life real? Is your life substantial? That's the first thing. How do we know? Or if not so, how do we make it substantial? And I think the second question he gets us to answer is what is your life worth? What is your life worth? I think the key question here, again, that Solomon is trying to ask here, and he's going to spend the rest of the book trying to figure out, is what is your life worth? What does it profit a man for all the labor which he does under the sun? What's the point of it? You think about it, and some of you are a little older than I am. You think about everything that you've done in your life. What is the point? What's the purpose? What's the reasoning behind it? What do you seek to accomplish or gain by it all? I think, again, these will be some of the things that Solomon will consider. And what we'll do this morning with the rest of the time that we have here, just to kind of give you an idea of what we're going to do, is we're going to look at chapter 2, because I think chapter 2 kind of gives us a good summarization of the things that man seeks. We'll look at chapter 2 and look at some of the things that Solomon seeks for, thinking maybe this will be the thing that makes me feel satisfied. And then at the end, we'll talk about some things that really give substantial, really give meaning, according to Solomon, to our lives. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, and we'll look at Solomon's charge to find purpose. We'll read the first 11 verses here of Ecclesiastes 2. The first 11 verses. Solomon says, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure, so enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it is madness. And of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under the heaven the few years of their lives. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself for which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood with me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold from my heart any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for my labor. Verse 11, this is the key verse here of this chapter and of what he's seeking here. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labors which I had exerted, and behold, it was all vanity and a striving after the wind, and there was no profit under the sun. So I want us to notice some of the things that Solomon does here, and I want us to just kind of go one by one through this list here. Notice some of the things that Solomon seeks to find satisfaction in. Do you notice the first one that he starts with there in chapter 2, verse 1? He says, come now, I'll test you with pleasure. And I'll see if maybe if I just live a life where I'm pleased all the time, if I just live a life where I'm happy all the time, maybe that'll make me feel whole. You ever met somebody like that? That to feel something, that to feel whole, what they think their life is about is pleasure and having fun all the time. Or people that think that to feel whole and to feel satisfied, I got to go, I mean, every weekend there's a different party, and I hate the weekdays because I got to work. But the weekends, boy, I tell you, that's what I'm looking forward to. That's what my life's about. It's just partying, or it's hanging out, or it's having a good time. How satisfied are those people really? So he tries that in verse 1, and he says, no, like that was futility. That wasn't it. Like that doesn't work. So let's move on to the next one. So he says, well, I said of laughter, it is madness. And I think that what he's meaning there when he says of laughter, I don't just think he means he's laughing all the time. But you ever met people like that? They don't want to take anything serious. They don't want to really think about life or consider anything in life. So everything is one big joke. There are people like that. And he says, this is folly. That's madness to think of life in that way. In verse 3, he says, some people make it, well, it's about wine. And I don't think that when he says wine there, he's referring to getting drunk. Because I think he says he's stimulating your mind. I mean, with his mind guiding him wisely. I don't think he's referring to getting drunk, but I think what Solomon is saying is, I want to feel good, you know? I want to drink a little bit and just feel good, and maybe that'll be it. If I just, every now and then, just drink, and that'll make me feel happy. That'll make me feel complete. That'll make me feel whole. Well, that wasn't it, and you know that, because in verses 4 through 6, he tries something else. In verses 4 through 6, he says, well, you know what? I'm going to build things. You know, the party life, that's an immature way to live. I'm going to be more mature, and I'm going to build for myself. I'm going to build houses for myself. I'm going to plant gardens and have fountains and all these things. I'm going to build for me. And maybe that will make me feel whole. Maybe that will make me feel satisfied. Maybe that'll be the thing that makes me feel accomplished. Well, that wasn't it. You know that because then you get to verse 7 and 8. So he said, well, then I acquired silver and gold and I had treasures from kings. That makes me think that he conquered other kingdoms, or he made treaties with other kingdoms where he had even their treasures. And for all the money he had, it didn't do much of anything for him. He says in verse 8, I had women. I had many concubines. And if you know that this is Solomon, then you know he had women. And that wasn't it. And in verse 9, he says, then I became greater than anybody and everybody who preceded me. Just imagine this. Imagine, like, you are the greatest person who has ever lived. Like, you are better than everybody at everything ever. And you think, well, maybe if I'm that person, maybe then I'll feel satisfied. Maybe then I'll feel good about myself. And do you notice what Solomon says there in verse 11? It was vanity. Now, I do want us to understand here. He didn't say it wasn't fun. Like, we need to understand that. In verse 10, he says, I mean, everything that my eyes desired, I did them. If my eyes wanted a hamburger, I got a hamburger. If I wanted my dessert before dinner, I did that. I didn't care. Like, he did all of that. And it says it pleased him. But you notice the difference there? It pleased him, but it didn't satisfy him. When he really reflected, He noticed that he was empty. And let me tell you, you may be sitting here today and you may be thinking to yourself, well, you know, I like building things. I like having a house and building a house. Like, that's where I feel, I'm happy with that. Or you know what? Like, my life is about pleasure. And you know what, Bill? Like, you and Solomon, y'all don't know what you're talking about because I'm pretty happy doing that. Like, Solomon didn't say that it was going to make him unhappy. What he said is that it wouldn't fulfill you. And there's a difference between the two. When you really reflect, and when we really reflect, if this is what we're making life about, you may be happy doing those things, but those things will not satisfy you. They cannot satisfy you. Let me tell you, so I wasn't going to say this, but now I kind of am. Like, the reason behind this lesson, and I wanted to do this lesson for a little while now, but I just felt like it wasn't the time. The reason behind this lesson was whenever my father passed away, or before he passed away, and I was with him in you know, he was asking me, like, what now? Like, that was what he was at. Like, what now? Like, what's the purpose? Like, what now? As he was laying on this bed, sick with cancer, and a few weeks from passing away, and as he considered his life, I mean, he asked himself, what now? Everything that I did, what now? What's the point? What's the purpose? And brethren, what I'm trying to do this morning is I'm trying to wake us up. Before we get to that point, I'm trying to get us to think, what now, right now? So that we'll change something. Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to get to that point, and this is what you made your life about. What Solomon is trying to help us do is wake up so that we realize, look, everything here under the sun, it's empty. It cannot fill you up. And again, you may think, no, well, I'm different. I'm gonna find something in it. Let me tell you, you will not. That's a guarantee. You will not find ultimate satisfaction in anything under the sun. And so then, how do we find fulfillment? I think Solomon tells us, because you think about his conclusion again, everything is vanity, everything is a striving after the wind. And so how do we find fulfillment in this broken world? How do we find satisfaction in this world? If everything is vain, if everything is empty, then God, why did you create us? And not just God, why did you create us, but God, you must be a pretty bad God if you created us and you put us in this terrible world. Why? How do we find satisfaction? How do we find fulfillment? I think the first thing you need to do is understand that this is a broken world. If you really want to find fulfillment in this broken world, you need to understand what this world is. And a lot of what we're going to look at for these last points as we wrap up, a lot of what we're going to look at is perspective things. What Solomon wants us to do is check our perspective. And go to chapter 1 and verse 15. I'll show you what I mean here. Again, as he starts the book, he says, he kind of looks for wisdom and he sees the futility of wisdom. And this is why, because he says, I have seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after the wind. In verse 14. In verse 15, he says, what is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I think what Ecclesiastes does for us, and again, we won't have time to go through the whole book, but read it. Because what Ecclesiastes does for us, what Solomon does for us, is that he helps us see the brokenness of this world so that we would seek a better world, so that we would seek a more fulfilling world, a more satisfying world. So that we would seek heaven. Imagine you went to a restaurant and they only offered you an appetizer. Like, that's it. Like, we understand what appetizers are for, right? Like, you eat them while you wait for the actual meal to come. This world is kind of like an appetizer. You need to understand that's all that there is. There is a better meal. There is a full meal coming after this world. And if you just had an appetizer, and maybe if your appetite is kind of like mine, if you just had an appetizer won't fill you. It'll leave you hungry for the real meal. And that's what, again, that's what this world is supposed to do. Those things that God created, those things that we saw in verse 2, none of those things are bad things. They're just not the thing that your life needs to be about. They're just not the thing that'll make you feel satisfied. They're just not the thing that'll make you feel whole. And in fact, what it's supposed to do is it's supposed to make you hungry for a place where you'll actually be pleased and be satisfied. It's supposed to make you feel hungry and long for a place where everything, like where you have those things, where you have possessions, where you have real riches, and you're satisfied. Like, that's what this world is supposed to do for us. This world is broken. You know, imagine if you started a puzzle, and it's like an 100-count puzzle, and you only had 95 pieces. Let me tell you, you're never going to finish it. Because you can't, because there are pieces missing. And this world is broken. There are pieces missing. There are things missing. And you just won't be satisfied here. You can't be satisfied here. And so understand the brokenness of this world. And understand that brokenness is supposed to create a desire for wholeness. Well, I think another thing that we need to understand to find fulfillment in this broken world is you need to understand to enjoy things under the sun without giving them absolute purpose. So as Solomon goes throughout this book, again, he's not saying money is bad. He's not saying pleasure is bad. He's not saying laughter is bad. These are real things that God created. And I think God wants us to enjoy, but he wants you to enjoy them in the proper perspective. Imagine, well, you don't have to imagine, I hope all of you have refrigerators. But imagine if you expected your refrigerator to cook your meal for you. How happy would you be with your refrigerator right now? If you just expected it to make your meal for you. Would you be very happy with it? I wouldn't be. You know why? Because my refrigerator currently, as it is constructed, it cannot do that. Because that's not its purpose. But if I understand my refrigerator is supposed to keep and preserve my food, then I'm going to be happy with my refrigerator because it's playing its role. It's playing its purpose. And those things that we see under the sun, the laughter and the pleasure and the money and the friends and the family and the relationships, these are all great things. These are all good things if you put them in their proper place. They are not the thing that your life is about. With this point here, with the learning to enjoy things under the sun without giving them absolute meaning, we have got to learn that we can enjoy things in this world without having to find absolute meaning in them. Because absolute meaning is found in the one who dwells over the sun, not in anything under it. We've got to understand that. Now, I put the verses up there because for the sake of we're not going to read those verses. But you look through those verses and that's what he's saying. Eat, drink, be merry, be happy. These are good things. Take your wife, be happy in the wife of your youth. These are good things. But they are not the ultimate thing. And we need to get that. Turn to chapter 11. We'll get the next point here. Chapter 11, he says, kind of a phrase that to me has always been a little weird and confusing almost to understand. But chapter 11, verses 1 through 4. He says, cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Divide your portion to seven or even to eight, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. If the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth, and whether a tree falls toward the south or the north, wherever it falls, wherever the tree falls, there it lies. He who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at clouds will not reap. I think what he's telling us here, especially with that first part there, the casting your bread on the waters. I don't know about you, but if I had bread, putting it on the water doesn't make sense because then my bread will drift away from me. But I think what Solomon is getting at here in the point is we think about this eternal perspective that we need to have. You need to learn to say no to things today so that you can have greater things in the eternal tomorrow. We need to learn to cast your bread on the waters. You need to learn to let go of things and understand and realize you will have a greater thing tomorrow. As we find fulfillment in this broken world, something that this world tells us, something that society tells us, the wisdom of this world tells you, you need to try to get as much as you can now, and you hang on to it for dear life. Life is about survival, and you keep everything. You don't let go of anything. This is all yours, and people will try to take it, but you hold on to it for dear life. Solomon is saying, you cast your bread on the waters. Let go of those things, and it will come back to you later. And the idea, let go of the things. Learn to sacrifice things in this life. And a much greater thing, much greater life, will come back to you later. But all of these things and these ideas, they're great and they're helpful and they're useful. But as Solomon finishes his sermon, go ahead and go to chapter 12, and I want us to look at the last few verses. As Solomon finishes this sermon, and he finishes the sermon to the assembly, to the ecclesia, this Ecclesiastes, to the group of people, whenever he considers what is man's life about, what are you about, what is your purpose, who are you, why are you here? Notice what he says in verses 13 and 14. He says the conclusion when all has been heard is just do more of that stuff under the sun and feel happy. Is that what it is? The conclusion when all is heard is just do whatever makes your heart feel happy. Is that what he says? The conclusion when all has been heard is fear God and keep his commandments. Because this applies to every person. I like the way the ESV puts this more than the New American Standard. He says, for this is the all of man, or this is man's all. You want to learn how to really find fulfillment in this life? You want to learn how to really find satisfaction in this life? You want to really learn how to be the best you in this life? Fear God and keep his commandments. That is what life is about. As Solomon concludes this sermon, as he kind of goes through everything in these 12 chapters of what is life about, what's my purpose, what are the things that I think might make me feel satisfied, as he gets to this conclusion, this is the end of the matter. After everything has been heard, after everything has been laid out there on the table, after we've considered everything that we seek, all the endeavors that we had to make us feel whole, to make us feel satisfied, this is the end of the matter. Fear God and serve him. That's the all of man. It always fascinates me that throughout the book, he'll talk about vanity over and over and over, how everything is empty, and he finishes the book by saying, this is everything. In this life, there is nothing. In this life, there is emptiness. But when you serve God, you have everything. Let me tell you, when you can consider life and consider life with God, and you can think of life in an internal perspective, it even gives life, it even gives purpose to the things you do here. I think that's what he's really hitting at here. And that idea of fearing God and keeping his commandments, I don't think that the fearing God is this, I'm afraid, what it means to be human is that I'm afraid that God's going to zap me down. I think Dave Hamlet, he preached this, I mean, maybe a year and a half ago, and I just won't forget this. When he was talking about the fear of God, there's two different types of fear. There's this fear where God is going to strike me down. And then there is this reverential fear where I understand the greatness of God. I understand that he is, chapter 12, verse 1, he is the creator. And so I look toward the creator for real satisfaction. I look toward the creator for real fulfillment. And I am listening to him. And so I don't just revere God and think God is great, but I also keep his commandments. Let me tell you, the man started feeling broken whenever they stopped doing that last one. Back in the garden, when they didn't fear God, they didn't revere God. In fact, they listened to a servant and they stopped keeping his commandments. That's when the world broke, say you will. And you read throughout the Bible, and you look at God's commands, you look at what people do, what God was constantly telling people was, fear God, fear me, and keep my commandments. It's interesting, it always fascinates me. Whenever Abraham's about to sacrifice Isaac, and God stops him, do you remember what the angel says to Abraham? I have saw that you have feared God and obeyed his voice. You go to Deuteronomy, in Deuteronomy chapter 10, whenever God is telling, God, what does God want from Israel? That they would fear me and keep his commandments. You want to feel human? You want to feel whole? You want to feel satisfied? You want to feel like your life has purpose? This is what it's about. It's about understanding who God is, about understanding his greatness, and about serving him. It's about learning to say no to things today. It's about casting those breads upon the water so that you can expect a greater return, a greater reward. It's about learning to enjoy things here in this life under the sun without giving them absolute purpose, without making everything under the sun your life. And it's about understanding that this world is broken so that it would create a hunger for a newer, a greater, and a better world. So it's interesting. Jesus says some words very similar to this in Mark chapter 8. In Mark chapter 8, as Jesus is talking to the people around him, he says, what does it profit a man if he gained the whole world and lost his soul? Kind of like he goes back to Solomon's premise there in chapter 1, verse 3. What profit does man have for all the work that he does under the sun? Jesus asked the same question. What does it profit you if you gained everything and lost your soul? What is your soul worth that you will give everything for it? Like, what's your soul worth? That's the question he asks. And then you notice what he says if you actually want to give life. If you want to have life, if you want to give your life purpose and meaning, For whoever would deny himself and follow after me. Like that's how you get life, denying yourself and following after Jesus. Whoever gives up this life will have. Whoever loses his life in this world will have the next life. That's his point there. I mean, that's a theme throughout all of the Bible. So as you think this morning, if you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, what's your life about? You know, like what have you been making the purpose of your life, the point of your life? If it was one of those things that we saw in chapter 2, or you can keep going throughout the book, if it's something that's not Jesus, if it's something that's not God, if it's something that's not fearing God and keeping His commandments, I'm telling you, you can go down that rabbit hole if you'd like, but you're going to come up empty. Because everyone who has ever lived, who has ever gone down that rabbit hole, has come up empty. You find your real purpose in Jesus, and in serving Him, and fearing Him, and keeping His commandments. If we could help you this morning, you can give your life purpose by being baptized into Him. If you're here and you're a Christian and maybe you've lost that perspective and you've started seeking for the things of this life under the sun as opposed to following the one who's over the sun, you can change that. You can come forward as we stand and as we sing.